This is Steve Traxel, and I use the pitch like I like my barbecue, low and slow. You're listening to Baseball and Barbecue with Jeff and Lynn.
From the studios of Baseball and BBQ on Long Island, New York, this is episode number 187 of Baseball and BBQ, where LFC stands for
Live Fire Cooking.
I'm Jeff the Old Coot Cohen, along with Leonard Hollywood Aberman. Welcome back to our show, Leonard. I threw you a curveball.
Yeah, absolutely. I love how you figured it out on the fly. Let's see. It's LFC. Yeah, I got that. Okay. That's good. Jeff, we've got some great guests.
Yes.
Because we've got, we've got one baseball guest and five barbecue guests. So let's
five?
Just. Five. You know what? That's a tease. So because that's a tease, I'm going to leave you right there. And I'm just going to tell everybody that we are brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online is your number one source for all your basketball information, stats, news, and scores. Get the latest odds and lines and the latest matchup reports for this year's NBA playoffs. Bet Online is your sports intel headquarters this season, as we have you covered for all your insider sports wagering needs. From basketball, MLB, NHL, golf, to the UFC and boxing, the fastest and easiest way to get your betting information, including live betting options and your favorite casino and card games available to play right from your home. Get into the action today. So head to the website or use your mobile device to join, and be sure to use our promo code BLEAV, that's BLEAV, to receive your 50% bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, where the game starts.
All right, enough with the tease.
Tim Haggerty, he is the broadcaster for the AAA El Paso Chihuahuas. Jeff, that is the San Diego Padres AAA affiliate, and we had him on to talk about his book, Tales from the Dugout, 1001 Humorous, Inspirational, and Wild Anecdotes from Minor League Baseball.
And that was a very good book. I really liked it.
Yeah, very funny, very just entertaining, the perfect coffee table book. And then, Jeff, five, count them. You can count them on one hand.
Yeah.
Five barbecue guests from our trip to Pig Beach. We teased that on a prior episode. We said we'd have it, and we do. And they are Gloria Chabot, Harrison Sapp, Kelly Dallas, Phil Wingo, and Mike Johnson, who we met.
Not necessarily in that order.
Right. Yeah. But they're in there.
Yes.
When we headed to Pig Beach, they were extremely nice to welcome us for the Jeff Michener Barbecue Benefit, which is is an annual event, and it seemed to have grown. They had Michael Simon there this year, so I can just see bigger and better things for them. It was a great event.
It was pouring. But people still had a good time.
I don't remember the rain.
You don't remember the rain.
I don't remember soggy buns.
But Len, you know what? This episode's dropping on May 27th. And
yes.
Memphis in May would have been completed. And you know who won Memphis in May.
No, Jeff, tell me, who won Memphis in May?
Shane McBride.
Won Memphis
in May.
Yeah, congratulations to Shane.
One of the owners of Pig Beach.
Yeah, his team is Ridiculous Barba Crew.
Could you say that again?
Can you imagine if you...
It's Ribdiculous.
Oh, what'd I say? Ridiculous?
Yes.
Ribdiculous.
There you go.
Ribdiculous Bar B Crew. K-R-E-W.
Yes. Wow.
I want to know who came up with that name. Whatever they won. That's a huge win. Speaking of huge wins, and maybe that wasn't a surprise. I don't know, but I'm sure there's a lot of people that are probably like, how did that New York team win, or, you know, something?
Well, they're from all over the country. True.
Yeah. But Jeff, speaking of surprises, let's talk baseball for a second.
Okay, for a second. Right?
And we are a little more than a quarter of the way through the season. Let's talk about surprises. Let's talk about the teams you're surprised are doing extremely well. Who's surprising you?
I think Tampa Bay is, I don't know if it's a surprise. Maybe it's a surprise they're doing so well. But yes. Baltimore Orioles are just two and a half games behind them as of this recording. That's got to be a surprise as well.
You expected Tampa Bay to be good.
Yep.
They always are. They seem to be every year. The Orioles, you expected to be good. They had a good season last year. If you had told me Tampa Bay, and like you said, you know, we're recording this a week before its release. So if you had told me, though, that Tampa Bay was going to be, with the record that they have, and Baltimore was only going to be two and a half games behind that, I would have never believed it.
How about this? Toronto is in last place in the AL East at 25-22.
Yeah.
If they were in the Central Division, they'd be tied for first place.
Yep. Yeah, because right now Minnesota. All right, so that surprises you.
Yes.
Does it surprise you that the Yankees are currently in third place?
I don't know about third. The record doesn't surprise me. I mean, they're 29-20 as of, the 22nd of May?
It's not terrible. Not terrible.
No, not terrible. But it's because Tampa and Baltimore just red hot.
Every team in the American League East has a winning record.
That is true.
Does it surprise you how bad Oakland is?
Oh, yes. Yes, that's a tanking team if you ever seen one.
You knew they'd be bad, but not
10 wins. It's almost June. If 10 wins.
So, Jeff, the Mets hold the record for the most losses in a season, right? Still?
Yes.
Right? The 62 Mets.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, 120 losses.
Okay. How many?
120.
Oakland going to surpass that?
I don't know if they'll surpass it, but they might threaten it.
They're 10-38.
I know.
What is that over a full season? Do you know what that comes out to?
No, you
didn't. 11 wins total?
Off the top of my head?
The whole season, they might win one more.
That's a 208 winning percentage.
Maybe they win 12 games all season. Yeah, another two. Who knows? They don't know. Are they? Well, they're going to Vegas. Where are they going to be in Vegas? Where are they going to play?
Yeah.
Oh, the whole thing's a mess. That's a mess. Okay. Give me another surprise.
It's the San Diego Padres. 21-26.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's for the Colorado Rockies, they're in last place.
Do the Diamondbacks surprise you?
Yeah, they're doing pretty good. They're hanging in there with the Dodgers, just a game and a half out.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh doing well, although they've actually come back down to earth a little now.
Yeah, they've come down to earth. They're still, as right now, they are still a couple games above 500.
Right.
But they have, yeah, they've definitely come down.
St. Louis didn't start off well, but it looks like they're surging now.
Mm-hmm.
They were in last place a couple days ago. Now they're not. They're making their way up the charts. And Miami is doing better than I expected. Now, the Mets should have been better. They had a stretch of 13 games where they got one against the Nationals and the Tigers and the Reds. They came out 4-9 And then they go ahead and they beat Tampa Bay 2 out of 3, and then they sweep the Indians. I mean, I keep saying Guardians. Right. But go figure. But now they're streaking now. They won 5 in a row. And hopefully, when people listen to this recording, hopefully they would have swept the Cubs.
Right. So if the Mets win every single game from now, they will be 130-something in 23.
Yeah, exactly. Right,
yeah,
right.
So. Yeah. Yeah.
But you think funny, but you know who's funny? Tim Haggerty's funny.
Yeah. So why don't we just get to him? Okay. Because you're right. He is funny. Our guest is the broadcaster for the Triple A El Paso Chihuahuas. He's called professional baseball games since 2004. His baseball history articles have appeared in Baseball Digest, MLB.com, Sporting News, The Hardball Times, and other publications. He's also the author of Root for the Home Team, Minor League Baseball's Most Off-the-Wall Team Names, and the Stories Behind Them. We are very lucky to have him as he joins us to talk about his latest book. It's called Tales from the Dugout. By now, and it's 1001, which we will hit on everyone, 1001 numerous inspirational and wild anecdotes from minor league baseball. By now, you might know that our guest is none other than Tim Haggerty. Tim, we are so thrilled that you have joined us on the Baseball and Barbecue podcast. So welcome.
Well, it's great to meet you guys, and thanks for inviting me.
Oh, I'm going to start, Jeff. I thought I gave such a great intro. You wanted to jump in.
You could go lead off.
All right. I don't know if I should get to the book first or your broadcasting. The book is a perfect, and I mean perfect, coffee table book. We often talk about books being coffee table books where you can pick it up, read a chapter, put it down. You can pick it up, read a paragraph, put it down. It is fantastic and fun. As it's just great. So Tim, just what was your inspiration to do a book like this?
Thank you. That's what I hoped that it would be, to pack in 1001 stories, as well as all the illustrations and the fun layout that the publisher did. The stories had to be pretty quick. My origin behind it, I've always loved researching baseball history. And way back in 2012, when researching something else, I came across this 1880s newspaper article of a game in Austin, Texas that got delayed when a wild bull ran on the field. And I don't know about you guys, but when you see something like that, I want to know everything about it.
Oh, yeah.
So I realized that if I had never heard this story before, then most fans hadn't either. And I found there have just been so many untapped, crazy stories in the history of minor league baseball in the past, in the present, that a lot of people don't know about. So to me, that was the most fun, was discovering something that I knew baseball fans would be entertained by that a lot of them probably hadn't heard of before.
Before we get into the stories, and I always say with our authors, is you guys do the heavy lifting and our easy job is doing the reading and buying the book. But in your case, 1001 stories, the research that you had to do just to get a paragraph for each one. And it is basically each one is, you know, a paragraph, maybe a couple of paragraphs. I don't think there's any that's a page even. How do you even go about something like this?
There are a lot of different sources. Newspaper archives online were a great resource. I made a research trip to the Baseball Hall of Fame library in Cooperstown a couple of years ago. And what's great about the people there is when you tell the library staff that you're coming, they not only allow you to show up, they have a seat ready for you, and they actually have the books that you've requested already on the table. And that was just a great thrill in itself. You put on these gloves because they don't want fingerprints on these old baseball books. So flipping through like a 1908 reach guide, looking for the craziest minor league stories. There's also a Sabre member, Al Arrighi, in Maryland, who happens to be my uncle, who I told about this project too. He's retired. He loves baseball. And he would go through and flip through his baseball books and send me great stuff that he found. So I think that the research process was just grabbing a little thread and keep pulling on it, where if you're reading a biography of a baseball player, you know, maybe it's 200 pages, maybe there's two minor league stories in there, but you can grab the details, go to newspapers.com, find a full summary of something that the player alluded to in his book, and then insert that into your book in your own way.
You know, you mentioned the word crazy, and yes, these are crazy things, stories. They're just amazing and humorous. And I love reading it. I mean, it's just fantastic. I love these, all these little antidotes. And obviously, we're not going to go through 1001, but I mean, I did pick out a handful, and I go, how can this be real? And the first one I want to ask you about is a ballpark in two states. Stadium, which has home plate and first base in Texas, and then third base and the outfield was in Arkansas. I might have gotten that mixed up. Hey, let me read it.
Yeah, it's in Texarkana. You got it right. Yeah.
Right. Home plate and first base and third base were in Arkansas, and the second base and the outfield were in Texas. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, I love that one. And the publisher did a great job of an illustration on that page where you see a guy sliding and then there's a welcome to Texas sign behind him. Yeah, there's a couple of cities throughout minor league history that were in towns on state lines. Texarkana's one. There's actually a team that was named the Bristol State Liners. Bristol is a city. Part of it's in Virginia, part of it's in Tennessee. Yeah, I think that people really respond to the ballpark stories. There's another one where in Troy, New York, in the early 1900s, there was actually a stream that cut through the outfield, like a live river. Yes. So they actually put a small bridge across the river in the outfield in play. There was another one I found in Welch, West Virginia, and in Ferret Territory in the outfield, they had a cement sidewalk.
Oh, wow.
I don't think general managers would want their prospects diving on sidewalks these days.
Obviously, it's not going to happen today, but this is just crazy thing that did happen, you know, over 100 years ago.
Exactly.
I'm trying to I have so many of them that are just so funny. You could just basically take a dart and throw it. But here, making waves on July 20th, 1908, Class C Columbia Gamecocks player J.C. Bender stabbed his manager, Win Clark, while aboard a steamship traveling to their next series. Clark survived, and Bender was suspended indefinitely.
Yeah, and thanks for your lead into that comment. My hope was that there was really a high standard for a story to make it into the book. I do feel like 1001, all 1001 made me react, made me say, wow, that's crazy or that's funny. And it was a wild time. There's a perception, I think, among casual fans that back in the early 1900s or the late 1800s, that these guys were gentlemanly and they were polite. It is absolutely not true. It was a wild time because ballplayers back then, if they didn't play well, they were heading back to their hometowns to work in a mine or a construction site or these laboring jobs. So these games were battles. And there are stories about how umpires were treated, being chased out of stadiums. You mentioned there the player that stabbed his manager. It was a time full of saloons. There's a story in there that in 1886, there was a manager, Dan O'Leary, for Scranton. And he got together with some bookies and he bet his entire team's monthly payroll on the next day's game and told his players this as motivation. And they played great and they won the game. And they had a team party at a saloon all night. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's about five different things in that story that would never happen today.
But not all the stories are old stories. I mean, right here, spooky. The AA Trenton Thunder's home game on May 13th, 2016 in Trenton, New Jersey, had two fog delays that totaled about 2 hours in length. The foggy Friday was Friday the 13th.
Yeah, that was a great piece of advice from the publisher. They felt, you know, I have such a love for baseball history, but they felt to really make this book appealing to everybody to also have a good chunk of the stories be present. So there's more than 200 stories out of the 1001 that are from 2016 to today. Everything from both in 2017 and 2021, the single A Carolina Mudcats played a game using one bat. Every player used the same bat for every at bat, and they won both games. And then there's fun features like Nashville has this massive guitar-shaped scoreboard for the music history there. Albuquerque has Simpson statues. So I talked about that type of thing. In 2021, there was a single-A game at Jupiter, Florida, and it got delayed when a foul ball went into the concourse and bumped into a fire alarm and set off the ballpark fire alarms. So yeah, I really tried to make notes of current minor league entertaining stories as well.
Yeah. Len and I grew up in the loving baseball in the 70s and 80s. And you have here a minor league player by the name of Randy Poffo. And for anybody who knows wrestling, that's Macho Man Randy Savage. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, he played for the St. Louis Cardinals organization in the 70s. And he was, you have a nice illustration of him here as well. Did you do the illustrations?
No, I didn't. That was an illustrator named Ben Sampson, a guy I've never met. But he was hired by HarperCollins and Cider Mill Press, and I think he did a great job.
Oh, he did.
As I was working on this over the years, that's what I hoped, was some cartoonish illustrations to go with these stories, and that is a good one of Macho Man.
Yeah.
Tim, you are a baseball lover because you're a member of Sabre. You've done quite a number of the biographies, the BioProject biographies, on the Sabre website. If you go to sabre.org, and not you, Tim, but you know our audience, you will see some of these biographies that Tim has written. Some of these, I mean, I don't recognize, like, Mike Muldoon, that sounds familiar to me. But yeah.
Yeah, Mike Muldoon was an entertaining character in the 1880s. He used to eat 29 pickles a day, not 28, not 30, 29 pickles a day. There are many interesting things about him, one of which is he's been missing since the 1890s. Nobody knows what happened to him. He told teammates that at some point after his career, he said, I got over my fear of the sea, and he planned on getting on a ship and going back to Ireland, which is where he was born. We don't know if he did that or not, but it's funny. There's a select group of players like Muldoon that if you go to their baseball reference page, there's no death information.
So he may still be around. I mean, we could find him alive one day and eating his 29 pickles. I mean, that's a very...
Yeah, at age 150.
Wow, that's interesting.
We don't know.
That's interesting.
29 pickles a day may be a life, keep you alive. We don't
know. You might be right, yeah.
You know, also getting back to your book, I mean, some of these are just crazy stories. You know, in 56... Class B Aberdeen Blue Sox, their manager had them not arrested, but they had them in jail because they couldn't find any hotel rooms and they had to sleep in the county jail. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I love this story. So they were going to Corpus Christi on a road trip. Every hotel room in the whole city was taken. So the manager made some calls and the team slept in a county jail, the whole team.
So Tim, let's talk a little bit about your career. You are doing something that you've got those golden pipes, which is, you know, that's a good thing to have. But that doesn't guarantee you a broadcasting position. And you've been doing it for a long time. How did you start your career as a major league broadcaster?
I was lucky that my high school actually had the town cable access TV station right in it. And they had this class that kids could take. And they were producing a show that actually aired in our town, Canton, Massachusetts, and I was broadcasting games. So I was fortunate that when I was 17, I was already broadcasting games, feeling the high of when you had a good one and getting that good feedback, feeling the low and the embarrassment if you made a mistake and you heard about that. You know, looking back, that was kind of a gift to experience that type of thing, which to me is part of broadcasting. How are you handling both good and bad feedback? From there, I went to college in Vermont at a really broadcast-specific college. Always, as you could probably tell, was obsessed with baseball and wanted to do this. Went to the baseball winter meetings and was hired by Idaho Falls, the Royals rookie league team. And in fact, the foreword in my new book comes from Billy Butler, the former Major League All-Star. And Billy tells a story about being in Casper, Wyoming, and being on the field for a snake delay. There was a snake in front of him when he was playing third base. And I really wanted to get a big name player to contribute a forward like that of a crazy minor league story. And I was actually broadcasting that game. Billy was on that team in Idaho Falls. That's where I first met him. And I was broadcasting that game in Wyoming, doing play-by-play of a snake delay. So from there, bounced around to a couple of other cities and was very fortunate to get the job with AAA El Paso. Our stadium is only 10 years old. It's a palace of a stadium. It's just a stunning place. You guys should check out the pictures and come to a game if you've ever like it's. A lot of people say the best minor league stadium, and I agree. And the fans are really into it. Yeah, I've been very fortunate. El Paso's become a great place for my wife and my son and I, so it's worked out great.
It's going through the minor leagues. You like single A, double A, triple A. Is that how you progress to get your ultimate? I guess the ultimate you want to get to the major leagues. Is that how the progression goes, or is it other people just take other routes?
No, it is by level, because with each level, you're typically in bigger cities, better accommodations on the road trips, more listeners to your broadcast, just bigger operations when it comes to stadiums and front office. You know, with that comes some expectations every time. At the AAA level, you're dealing with players that are coming down from the majors. They're not always thrilled to do interviews with you. Whereas in rookie ball in Idaho Falls, it's like the most optimistic level of professional baseball. All of those players who just got drafted, they're sure they're going to be in the majors in 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. They haven't been passed over for somebody else yet. They haven't been traded somewhere or released yet. So there's a lot of different aspects to every level. And I think most broadcasters in the minor leagues strive to get better, make more contacts, and make it to the major leagues. Now, El Paso is just such a special place that I think it's made me more selective. You know, for example, this past winter, there was a job opening for a major league team where you do the radio pregame show, the radio postgame show. You do some other tasks as well, maybe occasionally just a little bit of play-by-play. And when I was younger, I would apply for that aggressively. Whereas now, just for me, that's no insult for people that did apply, but just for me, I think my current job is more enjoyable for me than that would be. So I didn't apply. So to answer your first question, certainly I'm always trying to get better, and that would be a dream come true, but I've become more selective.
Yeah, it's wrong to assume that everybody wants the same, you know, path, you know, to get to the majors or whatever. And because what I'm saying is that we shouldn't assume that that's where you want to be, or that's the, but I would think if, you know, if the Yankees or the Mets offered you the radio play-by-play, maybe you'd consider it. Is that?
Of course. Yeah. There definitely are teams I would strive for. And I think you're right. And I even maybe made assumptions like that in the past when looking at other broadcasters, you know, just the difference between being 25 and I just turned 41. So, you know, now I'm 41. My wife and I have a son who's in first grade. Mm-hmm. We live in a great community, a place where people listen to the broadcast, and I'm getting that great support where, you know, I think as people get older, you kind of look at things a little bit differently, where if someday I got a call like that, a part of me, it would be really hard to leave El Paso. I have a friend, Johnny Dosco, who was the Sacramento River Cats AAA broadcaster for 23 years. And he was just hired by the Oakland A's as a major league announcer. And obviously it's a dream come true. But I could tell talking to him, he felt some emotion about leaving Sacramento. He told me, I haven't started a new job since 2000. Yeah, I think when we get older and you build relationships, decisions like that aren't as black and white.
Right. We're talking to Tim Haggerty. He's written the book, Tales from the Dugout, 1001 humorous, inspirational, and wild anecdotes from minor league baseball. Tim, as announcer for your team, who are some of the players that you've seen come up that have gone on to the majors? And the second part of that is, can you tell when you see these guys, which ones are like destined to make the major leagues?
I remember in 2007, I was the broadcaster for AA Mobile in Alabama. And at that time, we were the Diamondbacks AA team. And this 19-year-old came up from high A ball. And 19 is a very young AA player. Justin Upton. And I mean, this guy is cranking home runs against 25-year-olds. He was fast. He was powerful. And I think that you can tell why the scouts are good at what they do. There are exceptions. There are your Mike Piazzas that were a 62nd something round pick and they make it to the majors. But if you look at like the Major League All-Star game and you click on their baseball reference page, so many of those guys were first round pick, second round pick, top prospects. So sometimes you can tell, but then sometimes you wonder, is your brain looking at them differently because you see that they're on the cover of Baseball America and you're studying them more? But with the Padres AAA team, I've been with the Padres AAA team since 2008. And the recent Padres regime, their general manager, AJ Preller, took over in 2014. And their style has been to be very active with transactions, trades, free agent signings. Because of that, we've seen some great players in El Paso, many of which are playing for other teams just because the Padres have been so active. But in recent years, Ty France was the Pacific Coast League MVP in 2019 for El Paso. It was an incredible thing to watch. He hit 399, blasting home runs, and he's become a Major League All-Star with Seattle. You know, so he's a recent one. Farther back than that, Hunter Renfro was a tremendous AAA player. He was the MVP in 2016. He's now with the Angels. Even farther back than that, Anthony Rizzo. Nationally, he's not known as a Padre anymore, but you remember that's who he made his Major League debut with in 2011. As a 21-year-old, he was outstanding. He had more than 100 RBIs in 100 games played, and of course has had a long Major League career now. So I guess most of them have been hitters and not pitchers, but you know, and then there's also, to me, the great stories are the ones who weren't expected to make it to the Major Leagues. We have this player with El Paso, Matthew Batten, who was, I think, a 37th round pick out of Quinnipiac in Connecticut. He's a smaller player. He's from Connecticut, a cold weather state. The odds were so far against this guy ever making it to the majors. And last year he got there for 15 games for a very good Padres team. So to me, those are the great stories where, you know, frankly, if somebody asked me, will Matthew Batten make it to the majors before that happened, I would have said, I don't know. It was not definite the way that Upton and Rizzo were.
Yeah, those are the kind of guys I kind of root for. You know, going back to your book, I noticed there was a theme, I guess, the Hollywood stars are mentioned a lot in your book. And you have in here that they might have been the first one to fly commercially to a road game back in 1928. That's a long time ago. Almost 100
years. The Hollywood stars. Yeah. There's another story in there with an illustration that they were actually owned by actual Hollywood stars. There was this group of actors and actresses that owned the Pacific Coast League Hollywood stars.
Yep.
And the Pacific Coast League has been around since 1903. And in the early 1900s, they were in some massive cities that are now major league cities. I mean, this was a minor league that was in Seattle, San Francisco, Oakland, Los Angeles, before Major League Baseball had gone west. And what was great is that league especially has been very well documented. There have been entire books about the early Pacific Coast League. And in the back of my book, I put the full sources, every book that I used, and a lot of them deal with the Pacific Coast League. That's such a great thing about baseball research is when you find certain leagues that have really been mined and you find stories. The 3I League, which is Iowa, Illinois, Indiana League, was a particular minor league in the 1930s that there were tons of articles about it. And these days we're the beneficiary of that. So yeah, I'm glad you noticed there are a lot of good Pacific Coast League stories. I'm here in the Northwest now speaking to you from Tacoma. So it's fun when I'm in these cities to think about certain things that happened years ago that I found.
You know, another thing with the Hollywood stars, and I love these tidbits. I mean, I love this one. In 1950, Pacific Coast League Hollywood stars asked their grounds crew to drag the infield dirt once a game, hoping to break any action, would spur the fans to leave their seats and buy concessions. And then this might have been the baseball tradition to start dragging the field in between innings.
Yeah, that's what I really like is the innovation. So much of baseball history has come from the minor leagues. There's a section in there that talks about, I don't have the exact years in front of me, but just how many leagues over the years have experimented with a pitch clock. The Texas League, with affiliated professional teams, was using a pitch clock in the 1960s. The Northern League in the 1990s was using a pitch clock. And to add a fun flavor to it, they had a loud buzzer at the end of it when it expired. There are stories of different minor leagues that used a designated hitter years before Ron Bloomberg made it official in the American League. We talk about PitchCom these days with the pitcher and catcher communicating via electronic devices. Jack McKeon, when he was managing Vancouver, had his pitcher wear an earpiece and tuck a radio into their jersey front pocket, and he was communicating from the dugout with a walkie-talkie to his pitcher on the mound. And apparently at the time, he was told this was legal. There was no actual law against that. You know, another one, you guys love baseball. I'm sure you're familiar with the major league team that wore shorts on the field, the White Sox.
White Sox.
Well, before that, Abilene, Texas did that in the minor leagues. They wore shorts. And the reason the players didn't like it is that they were getting too many mosquito bites during games.
Tim, I mean, you're traveling with your team. Do all the announcers travel with the minor league teams?
Yes. The exception was 2021 when MLB still had strict COVID protocols. Mm-hmm. In some cases then, announcers had to travel separately. But in the Pacific Coast League, we are traveling via plane for everywhere except when El Paso goes to Albuquerque. That's the one bus trip. But in 2021, I would go on the plane with the team because it's a commercial flight. So you're on there with everyone else that bought a Southwest Airlines ticket. But then after, because of MLB's COVID rules, I'd have to go and go get a rental car. So I could sit right in between two players for 3 hours on a flight. But then when they got on the team bus, I'd have to say, okay, see you guys. Don't want to get COVID. And I'm going to go over here. But I totally understood it. I mean, El Paso did not have any games postponed by COVID. So I totally support what MLB did, you know, to be so strict.
So the teams don't have their own private flights, though. That you're traveling with just a regular
Correct.
Flight.
Yeah. And AAA, it's commercial flights. And that leads to some interesting scenario sometimes. El Paso recently for two series had Fernando Tatis Jr., one of baseball's most famous players, and he was on the team flights from Sacramento to El Paso. So there is Fernando Tatis Jr. walking through Southwest security among complete strangers. I remember a couple of years ago, El Paso had Edwin Jackson as he was trying to get back and pitch for the Padres. And the guy next to him on a Southwest Airlines flight was reading a fantasy baseball magazine. I thought, if this guy's playing fantasy baseball, he absolutely knows who Edwin Jackson is, and he has no idea he's sitting next to him.
Right.
Wow.
Exactly.
That's amazing. I don't know if this is everyone does this, but I remember reading, I don't know if it was last year, one of the Mets, you know, had a rehab stint in AAA. I think it was AAA, and they bought the team. Is it like
the earbuds?
Dinner.
Yeah.
iPods, right. Yeah.
Yeah. And a big meal. And is that a typical thing that the players do when they come down and they're rehabbing?
Yes. Most of the time it's a post-game meal catered from somewhere. That was Max Scherzer who bought very expensive earpods,
right,
which is a tremendous gift. I had not heard of doing that before. But Joe Musgrove recently was with El Paso and he bought the team sushi and post-game ice cream. Fernando Tatis Jr. did a Chick-fil-A for the team after a game.
Chick-fil-A. I'm sorry.
He wasn't being cheap. I think that might have been like some people asked him for it. I think that might have been a request. But
gotcha. I mean, it's good.
The minor leagues, they don't get fed the best meals. So when these major leagues come, they really treat them well.
Yeah.
You know what? Years ago, the Chihuahuas were in New Orleans. And I typically let the players, you know, that post-game spread, I would never touch that. That's for them. I'm not in the dugout during games. I'm part of the organization, but I'm not part of the team is how I look at it. And 2015, Melvin Upton, you might know him as BJ Upton. At that time, he was going by Melvin Upton. He was with El Paso on rehab, and El Paso was in New Orleans. And he bought steaks, just these thick, expensive meals from a New Orleans steakhouse. And I happened to be going down there to drop off my equipment. And he walked up to me and kind of nudged. He goes, "You get one too." Well, you know, it's a nice thought. There were some left over. I didn't want to take any from any players that hadn't eaten. But he walked up to athletic trainers and coaches and he said, "Make sure you're part of this too."
Yeah, nice. That is very nice. You know, this one caught my eye in your book where it says Dunder Mifflin, AAA Scranton, Wilkes-Barre Railroads hold the office night at a game each year. And the reason I picked this out is because I know when I went to the Brooklyn Cyclones game, they hold a Seinfeld night.
Right.
And they had the contest and some of the actors came out and signed autographs and bobbleheads and got the Fusilli Jerry, the statue, whatever. But that caught my eye. I mean, besides Brooklyn and Scranton, do you know if anybody, other teams do that type of TV show night? I mean, is there Parks and Recs night or something?
Yes. Let's think of like a TV show night. I'm sure there's some others. As we're talking, I'm just flipping through my notes. Promotions in general have been such a fun part of this book to look at some crazy ones.
Yeah.
One of them that I love, I know this is kind of separate from your question, but in 2005, the Brevard County Manatees in the Florida State League decided they wanted to break a record for the most ceremonial first pitches. They invited everyone at town to come out and throw out a ceremonial first pitch. they had a local radio DJ doing live remotes, and people would drive off the highway, take the exit, park at the stadium, throw a pitch at noon, get back in their car, and get back on their travels. And by first pitch time that night, they had 4,218 ceremonial first pitches before a game. So, you know, that's another thing. In addition to the pop culture stuff, is teams over the years that have tried to break some bizarre world record. Winnipeg up in the Northern League had thousands of people brushing their teeth at the same time in the stadium to set that world record.
That sounds like a Turkwindle. Turkwindle. You know, here's one that I have to tell you. I think I might have read this three times because I was like, wait, what does that say? Am I just tired? It's towards the beginning of the book, Frozen Fun. It says, later that year, the Stars played an indoor exhibition baseball game on skates at Cornell University. One batter was given a home run when he hit a ball through the arena's window. I can't even, that one just doesn't, it does not make sense to me.
Yeah, there was actually articles about that and everything. It was done as a promotion where it was a baseball game on skates in an arena. Indoor ice baseball was kind of a novelty back then. They were not the only people to try that. I remember there was this guy, Charlie Mason. He was one of the early owners of the Philadelphia Athletics, and he actually put together this whole winter schedule of a baseball game indoors on ice. And the article I found said that the problem wasn't one of the obvious ones that come to mind. The problem was the lighting, that it was so dim, people couldn't see and catch the ball. Well, not to mention falling on ice, but
yeah. Right. And when they slide into second, you know, the players right. blade up. Oh yeah. Boy.
I mean, you have a record that may never be broken in this book. I mean, when I think of home run records, I'm thinking maybe Mickey Mantle, 530 feet, you know, hit one out of the Yankee Stadium. No, this one, the longest home run ever, went over 200 miles.
I love this one.
Yeah. So tell us about that.
Yeah. So it's 1982. The Toledo Mudhens are in Charleston, West Virginia, and Randy Bush hit a 200-mile home run because behind the right field fence at old Watt Powell Park was a railroad, and a moving coal train was going behind the right field wall, and Randy Bush hit a high home run that landed in this moving coal train, traveled right across West Virginia, and didn't stop until 200 miles later.
There you go. Never going to be broken.
Right.
Oh, that's great. Oh, wow. Yeah, Toledo Mudhens. When you mentioned the Toledo Mudhens, I think of MASH, right? Wasn't Klinger?
Yeah.
Yeah, in fact, he's referenced in the book. Let me get you the year. This is a fun one. So in 2017, the Toledo Mudhens inducted Corporal Klinger's character into their Celebrity Hall of Fame. And Jamie Farr had made various ballpark appearances over the years. He apparently really became a friend of the Mudhens.
Wow. I mean, minor league baseball is just, I mean, I know they've closed some minor league parks, but there are towns that just, they love, they rely on the minor leagues. They love the minor leagues. I mean, just we have like the Brooklyn Cyclones. And I mean, they're fairly new. You know, I don't know how many years. They haven't been around that long now. But the things they do in between innings, which leads me to my question. As an announcer for the minor leagues, I heard somewhere else that you have to do work as well, like in the office or whatever. You're not just doing the announcing, right?
Yes. I'm also the media relations manager of the team. So during the season, I'm there in the mornings, preparing rosters, stat packs. When there's media relations requests to speak to a player or a coach, I handle that. During the off season, I'm also working in the office Monday through Friday, meeting with businesses about advertising, doing other media relations tasks. Yeah, the job breakdown typically is one of two ways, like me, where you're a team employee year round, which is great for me. It makes it so it's year round pay with benefits. It's a great organization. They treat employees well. Some people love broadcasting basketball or hockey, and they'll treat it baseball as a seasonal job where they do only broadcast the games, but then they're not paid during the winter. And during the winter, they'll get their income from broadcasting other sports. I've always been 99% baseball. I love watching other sports, But if you asked me to name a Minnesota Timberwolf, could I do it? I don't know. you know what I mean? I watch them casually, and I've filled in on college basketball in our area at New Mexico State and UTEP, and I love doing that. But one night after broadcasting this close, fun New Mexico State game, I thought the broadcast went well. But by the time I was driving home, I was thinking about the Padres 40-man roster, and this is in November. So that's why I kind of have focused on baseball and not treating it seasonally.
You know, I love this little tidbit in your book. It's called Great Grandma's Grab, where Ann Kenyon, 91 years old, with 15 great-grandchildren, grabbed the foul ball barehanded.
That was San Jose Giants.
Yeah.
And I think they interviewed her on Good Morning America. That highlight made the rounds. A great grandma making a catch at a professional baseball game. Pretty cool.
And then she threw out the ceremonial first pitch a couple weeks later.
Right.
Tim, did you have any trouble getting to 1,001, or was it you had trouble not getting higher than that?
So for years, I was compiling this document, and finally I got to a point where, okay, what am I going to do with this? What's the format? And I walked by one of my wife's cookbooks and it said 1,001 recipes. And I thought, that's the number. I like that. There's a lot of books that involve 1,001. So mm-hmm. I actually had about 1,100 stories. What I did was either trim the ones that I couldn't really have a good source for, or maybe they weren't good enough, or also if two were similar. So like in 1930, there was an umpire who got arrested for using foul language on the field. And in 1907, there was a player who was arrested for using foul language on the field. Instead of two stories, I merged that to one. And that's how I got down to 1,001. Yeah. And by the way, notice not ejected. They were actually arrested for using a swear on the field.
How much fun was it putting this together?
So fun. And the thing that I'm so excited about is that it's a good-looking book. That part had nothing to do with me, but the design, the illustrations, the layout, I just think that part is exactly what I wanted. Really a fun visual book. And I think that even people that aren't baseball nuts like you guys, even a casual fan, would be entertained by it.
Yep.
Here's a good one. This you want to laugh? The Six Commandments. The Six Commandments. It'd be like, bringing down the stones. In 1891, the Oklahoma City Pirates published these ballpark rules. Number one, no intoxicating beverages allowed on the grounds. Okay, that makes sense. Number two, no profane language allowed. Number three, betting strictly forbidden. And here's where it gets really good. Number four, killing of umpire prohibited. Number five, absolutely no prostitution allowed on the grounds. That's why Jeff says he'll never go there.
Yeah.
And number six, horses and carriages allowed on the grounds free of charge. They didn't charge for parking.
Yeah.
That's just so beautiful.
So in the winter, I got to go on MLB Network and talk about the book. And one of the hosts was Bill Ripken. And before we went on the air, just kind of small talk during the commercial break, that was the one story that Bill Ripken brought up as well, was the exact things that you just read. So I'm glad that one's getting some attention. And, you know, the book is family friendly. I'm getting messages from people that are reading it to kids, which I love. And on that one, it did mention prostitution. So I kind of hesitated to put that in the book, but then I thought it's so good that I have to put it in.
Yeah, I mean, I think kids have heard a lot worse than that these days.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're okay.
And Tim, one last one before we let you go, and we appreciate your time. Tell us about Jack Corbett's world-famous Hollywood-based sets.
Yeah, this is another one talking about innovation, like the way we talked about the pitch clock and the DH. A minor leaguer named Jack Corbett never made it to the majors, but his bases did. He was a player from 1908 to 1917. He thought the bases were too loose and that it might be dangerous. So he's the one who created bases with a stem to stick in the ground for stability. And he invented Jack Corbett Hollywood base sets. Major League Baseball picked up the patent in 1939. And it's been the official base of Major League Baseball ever since.
Yeah, how about that? Now it's just a little bit bigger.
That's right. Yeah, I wonder what Jack would think about that. That's true.
Tim, where can people pick up the book and any social media that you want to plug? Please go ahead.
The title is Tales from the Dugout, 1001 Humorous, Inspirational, and Wild Anecdotes from Minor League Baseball. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it anywhere books are sold. You can go look for it or ask for it at your local bookstore. And my Twitter is TD Haggerty, Haggerty with one G. And the book also has a fun Twitter page called Miners Team Names, Minor League Stories, that I kind of try to go behind the scenes and post some newspaper clippings of where I found some of these stories.
Well, please go. We encourage everybody. It's a really fun book, nothing serious. It's just really fun. Like Glenn said, coffee table book. Pick it up, read a few pages, put it down, pick it up again. It's just so much fun to read. And thank you very much, Tim, for joining us on Baseball and BBQ.
Thanks for your kind words about the book, and I enjoyed talking to you guys.
Hi, this is Gary Mack of the Mets Musings podcast. And if you like barbecue and you like baseball, then you have to listen to Baseball and BBQ with Jeff and Lynn. They always have the best guests from the world of baseball and the world of barbecue, all in one little package. So check it out. Baseball and BBQ with Len and Jeff. Okay, guys, take it away.
And we thank you, Tim Haggerty, for joining us on Baseball and BBQ. His book was really good. I love the structure of the book. I love the illustrations of the book.
It's a great, it will make a great gift. Father's Day is approaching, and it would make a great Father's Day gift. You know what else would make a great Father's Day gift, Jeff?
What's that?
Barbecue tools from baseballbbq.com. And when I say barbecue tools, I'm talking about spatulas, tongs, forks, bottle openers that all have baseball bat handles.
And you can also get big rub from them too.
Yeah, you can. And you know what, Jeff? When you put that big Rube's rub on a big piece of meat and then you need to carve it, you could take out that carving board that's shaped like home plate.
Or a uniform.
Yeah, and carve it right on there.
And engrave with your favorite player's name and number.
Yeah, or maybe you want to just put...
Well, your name and number.
You want my name and phone number?
Yeah. But if you want our phone number, you give us a call at 516-855-8214. Or you can email us, baseballandbbq@gmail.com. Leave a comment on our Facebook page at Baseball and BBQ. We have a Twitter.
Tweet.
At Baseball and BBQ. Instagram, Baseball and Barbecue, where barbecue is all spelled out. We have a website, www.baseballandbbq.weebly.com. Rate, review, tell your friends.
Subscribe.
Yeah. And you know what? You can put all that information on one of those home plate carving boards from baseballbbq.com.
It would fit. And they could do it.
Yes, they could do it.
And Jeff.
What?
We're always giving. So we've got, you know what, coming up. Come on. Let's do it.
Barbecue quote of the week.
I love New York, but I'm happy to be away from it. I really like small towns with welcoming barbecue restaurants. And that's American Magazine photojournalist David Burnett. He's right, yeah. What's wrong with small town barbecue?
Speaking of barbecue, we have five very good. You know what? I almost said one of them is not a barbecue person. She was at Pig Beach. That's Gloria. But you know what? Barbecue, you need desserts. And you need good desserts. And when I'm talking about brownies and just... You know, you really need, when you have a good barbecue, you need some really good dessert. Gloria, Harrison, Kelly, Phil, Mike, here they go.
So we are here with Gloria Chabot of Baker Goog out of South Carolina. And we were just joking with them because it's not really a joke, it's very serious. They have these beautiful desserts, you know. A good barbecue has great desserts.
You need a little sweet to go with the savory, for sure. Breaks up the smoke flavor.
Absolutely. Gloria, tell us a little bit about you, how you got started in baking, and how you got started in baking desserts that fit barbecue so well.
So I started off in baking as a kid in high school, baking birthday cakes for kids, and then went to culinary school in Rhode Island and knew that I wanted to be in the food industry but never wanted to be a chef permanently. So I learned my trade. Joe Baum at the Windows on the World coached me and said, "You're a nice kid from New Jersey. You better figure out how to run your kitchen before you get in front of it to manage it." So that's what I did. And then years later, I came into contact with Guy Fieri and a chef named Carl Ruiz, chef the Mad Cuban, and I became his right hand. And Carl and I would do these events together, and so that's how I fell into the barbecue world. But I was always more the baker. He was more of the cook. So I would do all his setups, his mise en place, get it ready, and then there'd always be something sweet that I'd be bringing around. And so that's what happened. So when Matt and Shane were getting ready for this year's Jeff Michener event, I said, "Hey, do you want some baked goods?" And they're like, "Yeah, let's do it." And so that's how we got here. And we've got some maple walnut cupcakes with a bacon bourbon cream cheese frosting. We've got some brownies. We've got some caramel pecan hand pies. And we've got some angel food cupcakes with a fresh raspberry whipped cream on it.
Wow.
And is this your lovely assistant?
Oh, my mini-me? This is my daughter, Becca. Ah, yes, that is my daughter, Becca.
We call you a sister.
No. She's my mini-me. So she's up here. She came up to give me a hand. So we took a couple days off from our day jobs to come do this because it's really important to support the Jeff Michener event.
Yeah. And how do you like bacon with your mom?
I grew up with it, so it's something we always did together, and I definitely love it. It's bonding time. Very cool.
Yeah, you said you went to culinary school in Rhode Island, Johnson & Wales.
Yep, exactly. Long before, there was only one campus back then, and there were very few women. Very few women back then.
You know who else went to Johnson & Wales? Jeff's not going to say it.
Oh, you went?
His son.
Oh, very cool. Well, my husband was a little older than I. He went to school with Emeril. They were in the same class. Emeril Lagasse. They were in the same class. So
nice.
That's how long we were bound.
We actually aren't that far from the CIA in New Hyde Park.
Yeah, it's a great campus. A beautiful property. Back in my day, CIA didn't offer a four-year degree. So as a, coming from Marlborough, New Jersey, my parents were like, "You're getting a four-year degree." So J&W, I was able to do both.
Oh, Wildcats.
Yeah.
And you're from this area, but you ended up moving away.
Yeah, I grew up in Brooklyn originally. So I grew up in Bay Ridge and Park Slope back before they were cool places to live. And then we moved what I call across the street to New Jersey. And then now we're in Bluffton, South Carolina.
And how do you like living in South Carolina?
It's been interesting. We've only been there about a year now. I'm originally from Massachusetts, then we went to Florida, Virginia, and then Maryland, and I actually worked up in Albany for 7 years. So South Carolina's getting used to it. Nice slower pace.
You know, it's funny. I mentioned to you that now I'm kind of a Great British Baking Show.
Yes, I noticed that. Yeah, your review of my critiquing my product was very British.
Yeah, it was. I said they look. I was for anyone who watches the Great British Baking Show on Netflix. I was Paul Hollywood, and I said everything is uniform. It looks well baked.
Yep.
And then I did my British. I said it's not stodgy, although I haven't tried it yet. But
well,
it
I
looks
look forward
amazing.
To your reviews after you get a bite or two in.
Well,
thank you.
We're very happy that you're with us. We hopefully this is just an introduction. We'd
for
like
sure.
to have you on during the year.
Love it.
And we would thank you for being at this amazing event.
Well, we thank you for supporting it as well. That's really cool.
Thanks.
So thank you. Enjoy.
We are speaking to Mike Johnson from Sugar Fire Smokehouse. Did I get that right?
Yes, you did.
All right.
In Missouri.
You know, it's not. There's so many great pit masters here today, so we are so glad to meet you. And he thinks he heard of the podcast, but that's okay because I think we've got a convert.
Well, you got a convert.
Welcome to New York.
Yeah, welcome to New York. And you were telling us that you're going to go to London with the Cardinals.
Yeah, so I live in St. Louis, and the Cardinals are playing the Cubs in London, June 23rd, 24th, and 25th that weekend. And I'm traveling with them, and I'll do a barbecue with the U.S. Embassy in London, and then do some barbecue stuff with the Cardinals.
That's awesome. He's going to London.
No food for the Cubs.
How did you get that gig?
I just do. I mean, I do a lot of stadium work in St. Louis, and I'm I do a lot of U.S. embassies around the world. Like, I'll fly and do their barbecue stuff. So it's kind of like an embassy slash baseball trip.
Yeah. So then I've got to ask you: do you know Greg Luzinski, the Bulls barbecue at Citizens Bank Park, by any chance?
No, I know Greg Luzinski, the baseball player. Yeah,
same guy.
He's got a barbecue place
at Citizens Bank Park in Philadelphia. Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh no, no. I know. Doesn't Boog Powell have a barbecue thing
in Baltimore?
Yeah. These guys are so. Greg Luzinski was a big barbecue guy. Yeah. So he told us he used to like get home from night games. It used to be like late at night, and he'd have his kettle grill going.
That's cool.
Yeah. He made the sauce that they serve. But anyway, a lot of these guys are into, you know, baseball and barbecue and all that. Yeah. But that's awesome. So you're going to London.
You know, Davis Love is one of the owners of Southern Soul. He works there all the time.
Yeah.
He actually works there. When he's not golfing. You see him there all the time. In your hat there. Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny because music, you got from the Foo Fighters, like a Grohl, right? He's a huge barbecue guy, right? A lot of it just crosses over.
Yeah, Rick Nielsen from Cheap Trick's a big barbecue guy. A lot of people like that, yeah.
We had Howard Johnson, who played for the Mets and is going into their Hall of Fame, and he loves his Big Green Egg.
Yeah, I'm still sore at the Mets from 85. I'm St. Louis. Well, didn't we beat them somehow? We say the Mets are pond scum. That was a whole thing. Remember that?
You guys are so good.
No, Strawberry lives in St. Louis.
Daryl Strawberry.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, he's running a church or something over there. Yeah.
Yeah, he's preaching.
Yeah. Yeah.
But look.
Thank you.
Still suffering.
Yeah, we're still right. Exactly, we're still suffering. You guys don't do a lot of suffering, right?
Yeah, we want a lot.
Well, we thank you for being here today.
Well, I truly love traveling with these guys, and Jeff is a great guy, and it was a big loss, and it's just good to see his family here, and everyone can raise money for his benefit. So.
Came, I mean, it's a great event, and we're glad that you're here, and we'd like to have you back on sometime.
Standing with Kelly Dallas right here from Hagapalooza, and you have a ho hog.
Ho hog. Oh yeah, but it's beautiful.
Thank you, brother. So
wow,
this one was about 149 pounds dressed. So we skinned it right here. Left the skin on the bottom, on the belly. Olive oil, then our dry rub in the smoker for 26 hours, 200 degrees with cherry wood. We don't open the grill, we don't move it, we don't do anything. Once we put it in there, it's good to go. Yeah.
You know, Kelly, it's a beautiful hog, whole hog, and then there's fruit around it. So you got grapes, you got some pineapple, you got some vegetables, the peppers. So basically, you've got your meat, you got your veggies, and you got your fruit.
Yeah,
all the food groups.
That's right.
Except bread, but maybe you could eat the cutting board it's on.
Yeah, yeah. And then, of course, you've got your drinks on the side. So, you're ready to go.
It's a meal to go. Yeah. Matter of fact, Jeff, you take one end of this 149-pound hog. I'll take the other end, and we'll just put it in the car.
How would you serve this to people coming up?
Grab a fork.
We're gonna. If you want it on a slider bun, we use sliders because everybody there's so much food. And then we put our award-winning coleslaw with it. It's a red wine vinegar base, and then we use a vinegar sauce with it. Kind of try to keep it all together. So here's the big question: do you want a couple of samples?
Oh sure.
That's what I thought.
Hell.
Yeah.
So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you samples
off of the belly.
So when they say pork belly, this is it. So this is actually the bacon from the hog.
And then holding the microphone.
It's not good. You got to put some of that bark with it.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
This is a PG show because I'm having a meatgasm, and I should not be on the air with this.
There you go.
Wow. Thank you. Wow.
This part of town in New York. Did you know Jeff? Or
yes. So I met the guys that own Pig Beach about 10 years ago in Memphis, at Memphis in May, the big contest. And we just kind of became friends because our teams were beside each other. And, you know, the barbecue community is really a bunch of good people. I mean, you know, everybody helps everybody. Everybody's friendly. Everybody's here to have a good time, to do, you know, present a top-notch, world-class, award-winning product. So we just kind of became friends. So I tell people, you know, people, you know, the North and the South, they can be friends together. So it's really funny when we get together because, of course, they have their Northern accent and we have our Southern accent. And when we're cooking together, people are like, okay, what's the deal here? Is somebody related to somebody else? Because y'all guys don't. But we have the best time. They're awesome group of people. Jeff, just a great guy. And then I lost my best friend that helped me the next year, almost to the date of Jeff passing away. And my buddy was a young guy, same age as Jeff, 38. And so last year the guys here had my buddy Trent as part of the benefit. And some of that money went to Trent's family. So they're top-notch. Top-notch. I wouldn't miss this for anything. Yeah.
We're talking about the community and barbecue, North and South. Barbecue brings everybody together.
Everybody. Yeah. Well, they say it's America's party food. Yeah. So, yeah, it's great, man. Great.
Yeah, even the even all the podcasters. I mean, I'm relating it to the barbecue podcasters. They all get along, too. You never find any problems. It's barbecue. If you have barbecue in your name, you're a good guy.
And, you know, just to piggyback on that, our town, we're in northeast Arkansas, so we're 50 miles west of Memphis. 3 weeks ago, we had an F3 tornado come through our town and just devastated us. I mean, half the town's gone. And the barbecue community rallied around us. Money, Operation Barbecue Relief came in. For 8 days, they served 30,000 meals. And the outpouring has just been unbelievable.
That is a wonderful organization.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. That's
what it's all about.
Yeah. I mean, we're standing at this event. We're here. Unfortunately, it's pouring rain, but you know what? It hasn't dampened anyone's spirits. You wouldn't even know it's raining. I mean, and everyone is smiling. It doesn't matter. This is an incredible event.
Well, you know, the people that cook, I mean, we're used to bad weather. I mean, because when you go to an event, they're not going to cancel it.
Right.
So rain, snow, whatever. So all the cooks, I mean, it's just another day. I hate it for the people that bought tickets, but still, there's plenty of tents. You can go inside.
Yeah.
You know, we'll be all right.
Thank you very much for your time.
Oh, man, it's great to meet you guys.
Thank you, Kelly.
Yeah.
Very nice to meet you, too.
Come back by. Okay. Come back by before you leave.
Yeah. Hi, we're here with Harrison Schaap of Southern Soul Barbecue and at the Jeff Michener Foundation Benefit. This is... What are you serving here?
We got a prime rib sandwich with pickled onions and horseradish
cream. Well, whatever
sauce.
It is, it's delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yes.
Awesome. And you're down from Georgia. You came all the way up here for the foundation. Did you know Jeff?
No, unfortunately, we didn't know Jeff. But
the barbecue community comes together.
Absolutely. Yeah, we all come together.
Give me food and then turn on the microphone.
You're doing great.
This is amazing. This is... You guys... Now,
when he's finished eating that, then you can eat yours and you hold the microphone.
How did it work that you guys ended up cooking this? No, that's a good idea.
Yes.
But how did it end up that you guys cooked this excellent meat, but like that this is what you decided to make?
Well, honestly, they asked us to do it again. We did it last year, and we do it every Friday at the restaurant, and we're known for it. And Rob wanted us to come up here and cook some more prime rib and do it for the folks. And it's really great because, like y'all saw, it's really hot, and it's a good day for it. You know, it's a really good day for it.
And you know what's amazing about this event? We were here last year, and there were so many people and so many
that
came that we didn't even get to talk to you guys.
So
I'm so glad we are now.
Oh, yeah.
You mentioned you have a restaurant in Georgia?
I do.
Oh, okay.
Southern Soul Barbecue.
Okay. Wet, but they're for you guys.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
I'll wear a hat.
Yeah.
Thank you. All right.
Nice. Thanks for
good.
Thank you. Thank you.
So so where in Georgia? Near
Atlanta? We're south of Savannah.
Okay.
And we're about an hour south of Savannah and an hour north of Jacksonville, Florida.
All right. So anybody in that Georgia area?
Yeah. We're right on the coast of St. Simons, Jekyll, Sea Island. That's where all the PGA guys live.
Oh, good.
You know,
very nice.
Yeah. Davis Love and all those guys.
And I bet they just go in and, you know, I'll order this and this, and I don't think.
Oh, they're awesome.
Right.
You know, they're all great.
We thank you very much.
Y'all know who's from Adam Wainwright.
Oh, Wainwright.
Yeah,
yes,
Adam
yes.
Wainwright. He'll be a man soon.
Can we just say something here? We came to a barbecue event. We're talking baseball. That's why we are Baseball and Barbecue.
Yeah, exactly.
It's this podcast.
Exactly. It's his turn to hold the microphone, though.
Oh, yeah,
it's your turn.
We get Scherzer and Verlander. We pay them as the highest pitchers in baseball. And I think one is going to be 40 and one is like very close to 40. And one hasn't played yet this year. I know he was Cy Young last year, but okay.
Taking a break?
Exactly. and then we got one guy who uses a lot of rosin.
No, that's the cheating guy. Oh, man. I'm so sorry Griffin missed this. This is great.
Griffin would have loved
My partner is a baseball guy.
Yeah. Yeah. He'll plug you guys for sure.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
But we'll have you guys back on.
We know where you are now. We're gonna get the picture of the Southern Soul Barbecue. We'll give you a call.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, please.
We'll get you something, and we'll get you back on for a longer
time. Oh, yeah, that'll be great.
Yeah, we would love that. Yeah. We would love that. Thank you, guys.
Wait, I'm having a meatgasm, please.
So, it's tri-tip with this spice on it that I brought back from Nazareth, Israel, that a 1,000-year-old butcher shop there gave me a handful of it.
Are you recording? All right, good. Make sure you're recording this.
So that's what we're serving on the tri-tip today, is my barbecue Nazareth rub tri-tip.
Nice. This is Phil Wingo. He is from Illinois. He is from Pork Mafia. We are at Pig Beach. We got to let everybody know that. We find out that Phil lives right near Meathead. This is a small barbecue world.
It is, very small.
I just had a meatgasm because that was incredible.
Well, I'm glad you guys came to me first because you had the best item of the day right now.
We can go home. Drop the mic. Don't drop the mic. It's expensive. But you're from Illinois. You came for this incredible event.
Yes.
Tons of pitmasters. Today, you got Michael Simon emceeing this event. What is it that brings everyone together?
Well, you know, the barbecue community, when somebody needs a little something, you know, there's always somebody willing to lend a hand. Jeff Michener was a teammate of mine. I cooked on the team with these guys from Pig Beach for our Memphis and May barbecue team. So I've cooked with them the last 10 years or so, and Jeff was part of the team. So anything we could do to help that cause out, I'm willing to go.
It's a great cause, and we were here last year, and it looks like the event just got bigger.
Each year. So I was at the original one in Brooklyn, and then there was a space because of COVID, and then last year here again. It's just a great space for this type of event.
Yeah. And, of course, they now have the space in Florida.
Yes.
Now.
And soon Louisville.
Oh, really?
So I manufacture their sauces and rubs.
Oh, you do?
And so I'm delivering to Louisville next week.
You got the spices out of Israel.
Yes.
How often do you go to Israel, and is there a barbecue in Israel?
Barbecue all across Europe, Israel, is barbecue's booming. So last time I was in Israel was 2018, but I go to Europe like 3 times a year to teach some classes, and I sell product there already as well.
Excellent. If you ever need anyone to carry your luggage, you know, I'm a very good luggage carrier.
Awesome. Yeah, and I go to Lithuania next month.
Wow. See? That,
all for barbecue.
Right. See? Barbecue, if you want to be a world traveler, get into barbecue.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
It's not just for the backyard. Wow. Great event. You came from Illinois, which isn't even the furthest that people have come.
No.
All right. Just, I did like a little deep dive into all the pit masters that are going to be here today. The experience of everyone is so varied.
tell us a little bit about your foray into barbecue. How you got started?
So I got started. I'd started catering, and then we got asked to go see about this barbecue contest, and then we ended up winning a couple categories. And I had a guy, a research and development chef, ask about getting into the spice business. So we started out the first year with 10 customers, 10 restaurants. We were making their blends for them, custom. And now I probably service 60 or 70 restaurants.
Wow. And it's growing, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Because, like I said, that food, that meat was really, really good.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
It was really good. So we appreciate it. This is just an introduction to you.
Yes. You now know how to get a hold of me.
We made a friend. We're going to let you get back to your
to
spending this day, but we will be in touch
awesome.
During the year. And we look
good
forward
to meet
to having
you guys.
You back on. Thank you very much. Yep.
And we thank everybody who joined us from Pig Beach at the Jeff Michener Barbecue Fundraiser. I hope the audio was okay. I mean, we did this outside on a portable recorder in the rain.
Yes. So,
we did our best. We hope you enjoyed those interviews.
Yeah. As we were trying to eat at the same time, it's just
exactly.
not fair.
Although Gloria, we did inside, but everybody else was outside.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, that's the price you pay for, you know, barbecuing rain or shine. But it was a great event. Looking forward to going back next year. Hope everybody enjoyed that. And Jeff, we are brought to you by Bet Online. It is where the game starts. So you know when you hear that, that we're not starting, we're ending.
With who?
The poet, Shel Krakowski. The musician, Dave Dresser. And the song, Baseball Always Brings You Home.
We'll see you next week for episode number 188.